Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with, why don't you just say your name and your title?
I am Deneen Brown. I'm a writer with the Washington Post. I'm working on this film, Rise Again, Tulsa and Red Summer. And I'm also a professor of journalism at the University of Maryland.
First of all, hello to a fellow Terp from the J School there. But yeah, so thanks so much for talking about this documentary. I know it's becoming available on National Geographic, and then I believe next week the director Don Porter is getting honored at AFI Doc, so I think you can stream it through their festival website too. All right, well, so obviously this is the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre. I want to get to that horrific event in a second, but talk about how in the documentary how you guys go to great lengths to set up that. I mean, as you even say, this didn't happen in a vacuum. Talk about all the other cities that inflamed as what we call the Red Summer of 1919.
Sure. Yes, Tulsa. I say that Tulsa, the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, didn't happen in a vacuum. In this film, we set the stage. We explain the racial terror incidents that set the stage for Tulsa. Red Summer, which occurred in 1919, was a reign of terror that included massacres in cities like Washington, D.C., Omaha, Nebraska, Elaine, Arkansas, which had one of the worst racial terror massacres in U.S. history, when historians say as many as 800 Black people were killed in Elaine, Arkansas by white mobs who actually hunted Black people down and shot at them. So I argue that Red Summer set the stage for Tulsa, set the stage for the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, which, as many of your viewers may know, the Tulsa Race Massacre began on May 31st, 1921, and ended on June 1st, 1921. As many as 300 Black people were killed in Tulsa. More than 800 were injured by white mobs. More than 1,200 homes and businesses owned by Black people were destroyed, and that massacre again by white mobs, and as many as 10,000 Black people were left without their homes. So this film, Rise Again, Tulsa and Red Summer, explores this reign of racial terror that consumed cities across the United States. And when white mobs descended on Black communities and Black neighborhoods and destroyed them by burning their homes and shooting Black people indiscriminately, it's a chapter in history that many people don't know about.
Yeah, and just to pick up of that final thing you said, a chapter in history people don't know about, a lot of people. Talk about how that is. I mean, it's especially after you watch the movie and you see all the atrocities, it is almost mind-blowing that so many people, you know, you could walk down the street and ask, you know, a regular Joe on the street, and a lot of them wouldn't even know about it. I guess in recent years, it started to trickle into pop culture. You know, they touch on it in Watchmen and some shows, but like, I feel like it's a relatively recent phenomenon. Why do you think that is, that it's gone so long? Basically, it's almost like a giant cover-up.
You're absolutely right. There was a concerted conspiracy of silence to keep it out of textbooks, out of history books, deliberately covering up these stories. The mayor of Tulsa in the film talks about he's five generations having lived in Tulsa. He didn't know about it until about 2001. It was, again, a conspiracy of silence. I like to tell this anecdote where the curator at the University of Tulsa's library, he came to work in 1980, and he noticed that someone had taken a razor to periodicals, magazines, and cut out any magazine article that talked about the Tulsa race riot. They called it the race riot at the time. But yeah, there was a cover-up. Civic and city officials in Tulsa called it an embarrassment, and they deliberately set about covering it up. And the massacres that occurred during Red Summer were also left out of textbooks. So yes, you're right. Just now, many people are finding out about these. Last year, Watchmen was released on HBO, and a number of viewers wrote into the star, Regina King, of that show saying, did this really happen? And she said, yes. In fact, she tweeted out one of my stories. Yes, it was real. So Hollywood is bringing these stories out into the open, and these documentaries are also showing people what happened in this period of history.
Yeah, I mean, it almost brings you to tears if you think about how many classrooms and history books that it was left out of, intentionally, too. It's not like it's just some oversight that happened a long time ago. You know, it's like you said, it's a concerted effort with razor blades and periodicals to extract it from the history because it was too embarrassing or whatever it was deemed. Like, that'll choke you up. So thanks. So I guess I'm saying thank you for participating in this, you and Dawn Porter, for doing this. Well, you know, if so, many of our listeners are probably in that same boat. You know, they missed hearing about this in their history classes. So let's back up and remind them of the history a little bit. Talk about, you know, explain how Tulsa, right prior to this, was, you know, was Black Wall Street. How you know, it was a burgeoning area with an oil industry and the like.
Yeah, so this community of Greenwood, it was an all-Black community that was so prosperous that Booker T. Washington called it Negro Wall Street. We now call it Black Wall Street. But it had a population of about 10,000 people. It had luxury shops. It had 21 restaurants. It had 30 grocery stores. There was a Black-owned hospital, a Black-owned library. There was a savings and loan, three hotels. They had jewelry stores and clothing stores and Black millionaires who owned oil wells. So yes, it was one of the most prosperous communities in the country. And in a matter of 2 days, it was all destroyed in this massacre. 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre left 35 square blocks of Greenwood smoldering. White mobs descended on Greenwood, and they shot Black people indiscriminately. They burned their homes. They burned their businesses. And then they also dropped turpentine bombs on this community. So when you look at the pictures, it looks like a bomb had gone off on Greenwood, and the community is totally destroyed.
Mm. Yeah, remind us what exactly, you know, what was the spark that lit that fire? You know, the incident in the elevator, and then, you know, how it just spiraled out of control. And I feel like so many, you know, of the perpetrators, the white perpetrators in this, use that as some, you know, just an excuse to just pillage and burn houses down. And they you describe stealing pianos and furniture and money from kids' piggy banks. And then these bombings, like talk about how it actually started with that small little spark, and then boom.
Yeah, so the massacre, actually, Tulsa at the time was a hotbed for the Klan. So you'll hear descendants of this massacre talking about how there was rumbling that trouble was coming. They were just waiting for a spark to descend on Greenwood. So in May, this incident that you're referring to began on May 30th, 1921, when a Black teenager named Dick Rowland, he was a shoe shiner working in downtown Tulsa, which was segregated at the time. He went to use the restroom in the Drexel building, and which allowed, was the only building in downtown Tulsa that allowed Black people to use the restroom. He got on an elevator with, operated by Sarah Page, who was a white teenage girl. She was about 17, and he may have bumped her or stepped on her foot, or some historians say they were actually in love, but nobody knows what happened in the elevator. But when the doors opened, Sarah Page shrieked and a department store clerk in that building heard Sarah Page shriek, and Dick Rowland ran. Again, these are two teenagers who were probably in love at the time. Later, Dick Rowland is arrested in Greenwood, where he lived. He's taken to the courthouse. The Tulsa Tribune ran a headline that said, "Nab Negro for Attack on Girl on Elevator." And that was like a whistle call to the white mob in Tulsa to come to the courthouse to where they were demanding that Dick Rowland be released so that they could lynch him. And now lynchings were really, they were real. I mean, a man had been lynched in Tulsa just previously, and more than thousands of black people had been lynched across the country. So this was a real threat. The black veterans from Greenwood went to the courthouse. They heard that the white mob was demanding that Dick Rowland be released. The black veterans marched to the courthouse to defend Dick Rowland, and a battle ensued between the white mob and the black veterans. A shot went off and a white man is hit. And then, as survivors say, all hell breaks loose. There's a battle, like a gun battle, between the white mob and the black veterans who were trying to defend Greenwood. Eventually, the white mob descends on Greenwood, this all-black community in North Tulsa, and again, the white mob began shooting black people indiscriminately, burning their houses, burning their businesses, and dropping turpentine bombs on their community. So again, historians say the spark was Dick Rowland in the elevator with Sarah Page. But other historians say they were just waiting for something to happen to destroy Greenwood and loot and take their property and wealth.
Wow. Yeah. And you mentioned the airplanes bombing. One of the most powerful parts of the documentary to me was hearing, the story of one of the survivors. I think she was a young girl at the time, and her parents pointing up at the planes that are bombing and saying, "Do you see that American flag on top? That means your country's shooting at you." Talk about how it became more than just, what you'd imagine, the old people in the streets with pitchforks, citizens. Talk about how it grew into, like, the National Guard called in. They round up a bunch of black folks into internment camps how the aftermath of that attack, scraping the bodies up, putting them in these mass graves, like how it became sort of a, you hate to say it, but like a state-sponsored cover-up.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. So the governor called in the National Guard, and the National Guard rounded up the black people who actually survived the attack and those who didn't run away. The black people who survived the attack were rounded up at gunpoint, and they were marched through the streets of Greenwood and into what they called internment camps. At the convention center, at the fairgrounds in McNulty Park, the black people were held at gunpoint, right, in these camps. And they were not allowed to leave unless a white family vouched for them. And some of them were forced into labor. In the meantime, there were black bodies that were lying in the streets. And many of the survivors said that these black people who were killed in this massacre were dumped into mass graves, or their bodies were piled onto trucks or train beds and taken out of town. It was, again, a horrific cover-up and a horrific, incident of racial terror. And then what we don't know more than 100 years later is, where are the bodies? Where did they bury the black people who were killed in this massacre? The city of Tulsa began searching for these mass graves in 2019. It actually found a mass grave last year in October 2020 in Oaklawn Cemetery, which is a public cemetery owned by the city. And just last week, it went back scientists went back into the mass grave and began exhuming the remains that were found in this mass grave. And as of today, they found as many as 28 coffins in a mass grave, which is a pit, all buried together. This was an unmarked mass grave in Oaklawn Cemetery. Nobody knew it was there until the city began excavating. So what's happening now is scientists will be examining those remains for any signs of trauma, any signs of like bullet fragments or any signs of burning that would connect the remains in this mass grave to the massacre, the 1921 Tulsa race massacre.
Yeah, I love how in the film that, you know, those shots of the, you know, the bulldozers going, digging into the ground and uncovering these mass graves. It's, and you hear from the modern day mayor of Tulsa as well about, you know, how when he first heard about this, he was shocked and said, if I'm ever going to be mayor one day, I want to try to exhume these bodies if we can find them. It really brings history to life. You know, it's a compliment to that, you know, all the black and white and still, you know, images and, you know, stuff that in the library that they're looking at, to see these modern day excavations happening. It really just shows us that history's all around us. And do they think that there's many more mass graves that are going to be found? Is that your hope that, like you said, some bodies were shipped even out of town probably. So is it your hope that maybe with a film like this, that even more mass graves, we're going to search for even more and find more?
Yeah, I know that in Tulsa, they did ground penetrating radar at different sites in Tulsa. And they announced in December 2019 that they found what they call anomalies under the ground, basically radar scans that look like mass graves in other sites in Tulsa. So they will be searching at a site called the Canes near the river. And then Booker T. Washington Cemetery may have a mass grave in Tulsa. And then if you watch the film, you'll see that Elaine, Arkansas, a number of descendants of that massacre are demanding that the state actually investigate and search for mass graves of Black people who were killed during the 1919 Elaine, Arkansas massacre. The city of Tulsa's mayor actually has told me in interviews that he has gotten calls from other mayors across the country and city officials who say that they're watching Tulsa for a blueprint on how to deal or investigate the massacres that occurred in their city. So this is, Tulsa is just one of many massacres that occurred in this country. As I said before, the Red Summer saw as many as 25 massacres occur in cities across the country. And then before that period, you know, there were other really horrible lynchings of Black people. So this is like a tip of an iceberg in racial terror history. And it is the hope of descendants of these massacre victims that city officials will open investigations and search for mass graves of Black people who were buried without ceremony.
Wow. It just gives you goosebumps to think of how many mass graves there might be out there. But I mean, at least they found one. Maybe we'll keep finding more. There's these anomalies. Maybe, you know, maybe people will see this film and be even more energized to continue looking. I guess before we run, I kind of want to end on this note. Obviously the massive loss of life is the biggest gut punch of this whole thing. Just the horrific loss of life. But the other thing that hits home from watching this and reading about it is the loss of wealth and generational wealth and opportunity and prosperity for the Black community. I mean, I think there's the even interview someone, I think she might be in Elaine, Arkansas, one of the people interviewed in the thing. And she says, you know, anytime Black folks try to build wealth and do all the things that stereotypes say we're not, every time we actually try to, you know, build wealth for our family and do the right thing, we burn it down. And this is an example of that. So talk about how that's sort of the legacy of Tulsa as well. It's not only just this horrific loss of life, but the burning down of what could have been, you know, we could be 100 years of prosperity from Black Wall Street. You know, imagine what could have been.
Absolutely. There was a tremendous loss of life, a tremendous loss of wealth. Just imagine, these were Black people just years after the Civil War, out of enslavement, who built Black towns and Black wealth and Black prosperity. And because of economic envy by white mobs, these communities were destroyed. Like, they were burned to a crisp. Black people were killed, all because of economic envy. Historians have told me that, you know, you think about this country endured more than 400 years of slavery, and white people felt that Black people should not have this kind of wealth, should not have this kind of prosperity. And as I was saying, in Tulsa, the Klan was, there was thousands of members of the Klan, and there was a march that occurred in Tulsa right before this massacre, a march of Sons of the Confederacy, and they chastised the white civic leaders in Tulsa, saying that, you know, how can you allow these Black people to live like this, to prosper, to live in this kind of wealth? So historians say that it was because of economic envy that Greenwood was destroyed, and that other communities across the country were destroyed. In Elaine, Arkansas, the massacre, the spark of the massacre happened after Black men who were in the sharecropping system, which kept them in debt, were demanding higher prices for their cotton, which would have taken them out of debt. They were meeting one night in this little white church on a country road to form a union to demand higher prices for their crop, when a car full of white men drove up to the church and shot into the church and killed as many as 80 Black people inside the church. And the Black veterans, two of the Black veterans inside the church shot back. A white man was hit, and all hell broke loose in Elaine, Arkansas. And again, as many as 800 Black people were hunted down in Elaine and killed, all because of this economic envy, or to keep them from getting out of debt. The generational wealth that was lost in these massacres, in the 1921 Tulsa race massacre and others, is tremendous. We know that in today's dollars, it would be millions and millions and millions of dollars of lost wealth. There is a demand by descendants of these massacres that city and state officials pay reparations for what was lost in these racial terror incidents, particularly in Tulsa, where we know from the Tulsa Race Riot Commission report that police stood aside during this massacre. They stopped the fire department from putting out the fires. They deputized ordinary white civilians to kill Black people. And they say it was state-sponsored terror against Black people. So they're demanding reparations from the city and state for the generational wealth that was lost.
So perfectly said. Yeah, I mean, it's so maddeningly antithetical to what everyone says the American dream should be. You know, you had these communities build a Black Wall Street and trying to set up their future generations for prosperity, and then you just come in and you undercut it, you know, and then you have the gall to say, well, why aren't you pulling yourself up from the bootstrap? Well, because you came in and burned our bootstraps. You burned our chances. Like, it's just, so thank you for shining the light on this. And it really is eye-opening if anyone doesn't know about Tulsa, or maybe, like a lot of us, maybe we're just starting to hear about it in recent years, Watchmen and the rest. Like, you have to go see this movie, everybody. It really will put it in perspective. Again, it's called Rise Again, Tulsa and the Red Summer. It's available on Nat Geo, and I know folks in the D.C. area at least can watch it on AFI Docs next week. Dawn Porter is going to be honored with their annual Lifetime Achievement Guggenheim Symposium thing. So, hey, thanks so much for doing this. You're a great voice in the documentary, and keep up the great work at UMD, Denise.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be here. Thanks for having me, and thanks to your listeners who I really appreciate it. So thank you again.